Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on the dangerous conditions for workers in Ghana's gold mines. It is a good occupation for thousands of people in Ghana's countryside, but many miners have died in accidents.
So the moment we are all rushing to collect the what we are wanted from the ground there. So definitely it will collapse. So that's why you can explain that the other side is, you hear that maybe this will have collapsed, maybe 3-10 people have died through there.
Then we will tell you about a woman in the southern American city of Miami, Florida, who is the guardian for 900 children.
If you're doing for one or two, you have to do for everybody.
Gold in Ghana and a golden heart in Florida. Those are our stories today on As It Is from VOA. Gold mining employs thousands of people in Ghana's countryside. Mining can be dangerous work, and mine accidents sometimes kill. But as Marcia James tells us, in poor, undeveloped villages, people say there are few other ways to earn money.
The rivers in Ghana's Ashanti area have a sickly brown color. The land has gashes, holes cut by excavators. The air is filled with the sound of mining equipment. Small mining operations are a common sight in central Ghana. Here, mine workers dig deep into the earth in search of bullion. But not everyone returns alive. Earlier this year, six miners were killed when an earthen wall collapsed in Kaikaiwer, a village in the Ashanti region. Local officials say a collapse last year killed 17 people at a small mine in Ghana's central region. Sebastian Aduko has worked in the mining business for 13 years. He says the risk is undeniably dangerous, but can be lessened if mines are built the right way.
So the moment we are all rushing to collect the what we are wanted from the ground there, so definitely it will collapse. So that's why you can explain that the other side is, you hear that maybe this will have collapsed, maybe 3-10 people have died through there.
The Adisa Ku Coast small-scale mine sits at the end of a dirt road. The operators say they follow government rules and work on land leased or on loan from a local village. Saeed Ababukari is chairman of the Mines Management Committee. He says the business is profitable and not hard to find workers.
Anyone can do it. That's why the moment you are 18 years, the moment you reach at 18 years, then you are free to come and join us.
Nina Kofi Gao is a local government official. He says the mines are hardly harmless. No one collects water from the local streams anymore because of pollutants. Many farmers sell off their land so mines can grow. The official adds there are few jobs for young men in the countryside. So if you can dig, you may have a chance as a miner.
So far as there's no work, and the people are also feeling hungry, they will go and find, because the money is on the ground. They won't sit down and feel hungry. Well, so far as the money is on the ground, God has given us a lot of money in the soil.
Saeed Abubakari says the mine is quiet this time of the year. Underground water levels are high, making deep digging difficult. He adds when the water levels drop, thousands will arrive at the mine to dig up the land. I'm Marcia James.
You are listening to As It Is on the Voice of America. I'm Christopher Cruz. Last year, the federal government removed 240,000 people from the United States who had entered the country illegally. Pew Research says that is 20,000 more than were deported in 2012. The children of some of those expelled stayed in the country. That is because they were born in the U.S. and are U.S. citizens. Some of these children lost both of their parents to deportation. Ann Ball now tells us about someone who is taking care of the children left behind.
Every day, Nora Sandigo provides supplies to the children. People donate the supplies to Ms. Sandigo's nonprofit organization. Ms. Sandigo also holds celebrations for the children at her home on Saturdays and Sundays. One room in her home holds bags of fruit, canned food, and other supplies. There are also records on each child, including photographs and government documents.
If you're doing for one or two, you have to do for everybody.
Ms. Sandigo plans to help an additional child and mother soon. Francisca will have a baby in about 3 months. She already has two daughters. Recently, a judge ordered her husband to be returned to Guatemala. Francisca says in Spanish that she does not know what will happen to her family, so she has given Nora Sandigo guardianship of her two daughters and her unborn baby. Parents ordered for deportation can choose to take their children with them, but many do not do so, because they believe their children will have a better life in the United States.
I don't want to take my children because here is where their future is.
The federal government will provide the children with financial support if they stay in the United States. But Ms. Sandigo says sometimes caregivers of these children left in the U.S. are afraid to seek help from government agencies. Ms. Sandigo's cell phones ring all the time. Someone always needs something. She says the demands will not end. She blames the government.
Who is doing the separation of the families? It's not me. I don't have any power.
Ms. Sandigo was so angry with the government that she recently rented a bus and took 38 children to the White House, where President Barack Obama lives and works. Elena Marquez cried as she told about her father working in farm fields in Florida before he was deported. She says she is now alone with her mother and younger sister.
Please stop the deportation now. Not only for my dad, but for other kids.
Jason Garcia is 10 years old. He also cried when he said in Spanish that his sister and mother are worried for their father, who was deported. Both Democrats and Republicans accuse each other of making political decisions about immigration. I'm Ann Ball.
That's our program for today. I'm Christopher Cruz on The Voice of America.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. How far would you go for a perfect body? Many people these days are going as far as South Africa to get their version of perfection. People from across Africa and the world come for so-called surgery safaris. There are no animals to see on these safaris. The visitors look instead for smaller stomachs, firmer bottoms, or perhaps a new eye, nose, or chin. Businesses that provide medical safaris say they have seen a large increase in African customers. VOA's Jillian Parker spoke with several cosmetic surgeons in Johannesburg for her report. South Africa is becoming the leading country in Africa for people seeking cosmetic surgery. For years, South Africa has appealed to medical tourists from Europe and the United States. But local cosmetic surgeons say now more clients from Africa's growing economies are interested in such operations. Lorraine Melville is a doctor with Surgeon and Safari. She has been performing cosmetic surgeries for nearly 16 years in Johannesburg. She says that more than 80% of her clients now come from sub-Saharan Africa. She says this is because Africa did not experience the economic problems that hit other parts of the world.
When the West started having its economic downturn, it was almost a symbiotic change, and you know, the scales just tilted. And we know Africa wasn't as affected by the economic downturn. There is also a huge emerging African middle class that has come to the fore. But for us, the growing market is the sub-Saharan African market. Africa's where we're looking to the future.
Her clients are treated like movie stars. Assistants take them from the airport to a luxurious guest house. They explain in detail the medical operation to be done. Doctors operate the next day. Clients can spend anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000 on a cosmetic treatment. They might spend an additional $2,000 on the cost of the hotel while they heal. For many African women, less is more. Ms. Melville says the most popular forms of cosmetic surgeries for African women are breast reductions and liposuction. Liposuction removes fat from the body. So-called tummy tucks are also common. This treatment removes fat from a person's middle. South Korea is also a popular spot for cosmetic surgery, but the leading treatments there are operations to create larger eyes, thinner noses, and pointy chins. A 2009 report from the research company Trend Monitor said one in five South Korean women has had plastic surgery. But South Africa is catching up. I'm Anna Mateo.
I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Christopher Cruz, with Explorations in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about two areas that are popular with visitors to the United States. One is a place of fierce beauty. It is Mount Rainier National Park in the northwestern state of Washington. The other is one of the most important places in the history of the American Revolution. It is Valley Forge National Historical Park in the eastern state of Pennsylvania.
The American Indians who lived in the Northwest called the Great Mountain Takhoma. One tribe said it was a female monster that would eat people. Other old stories among the Indians said the mountain could produce huge amounts of fire. In 1792, British explorer George Vancouver became the first European to see the huge mountain. He named it after a Navy friend, Captain Peter Rainier. Today, the people who live in the northwestern city of Seattle call it the Mountain. Mount Rainier is almost 100 kilometers from Seattle, yet it can be seen from almost any place in the city. The beautiful snow-covered mountain seems to offer the city its protection.
The mountain's offer of protection is false. Mount Rainier is not just a mountain, it is a sleeping volcano. Steam and heat often rise from the very top of the huge mountain, causing snow to melt. Mount Rainier is 4,392 meters tall. Its top is covered in snow all year. More than 25 thick glaciers cover a lot of the mountain. In some areas, these rivers of ice are more than 100 meters thick.
Mount Rainier always has been a popular place to visit. Many people go to enjoy the beautiful forests that surround the mountain. Others go to climb the mountain. Hazard Stevens and Philemon Van Trump became the first people known to reach the top of Mount Rainier. They reached the top in August of 1870 after a 10-hour climb through the snow. In 1890, a young schoolteacher became the first woman to reach the top. Her name was Faye Fuller. For many years after her successful climb, she wrote newspaper stories asking the federal government to make Mount Rainier a national park. Many people who visited the mountain also wanted it to be protected forever by the government. On March 2, 1899, President William McKinley signed a law that made Mount Rainier a national park. It was the fifth national park established in the United States.
Today, National Park Service experts say about 10,000 people attempt to climb the huge mountain each year. But only about half of the climbers reach the top. The mountain can be extremely difficult to climb. Severe weather is possible at almost any time. Snow and ice cover parts of the mountain all year. Many people have died trying to climb Mount Rainier. Mountain climbing experts often use it as a difficult test for people who want to climb some of the world's highest mountains.
do not have to climb the huge mountain to enjoy Mount Rainier National Park. More than 1 million people visit the park each year. Many walk on the hundreds of kilometers of paths. The paths lead through flat meadows, filled with wildflowers, and up through forests of large old trees. Other visitors drive around the park to experience its natural beauty. They often see black-tailed deer, elk, and mountain goats. The park is large. It is almost 100,000 hectares. Many lakes, rivers, roads, 2 hotels, and 6 camping areas are inside the borders of the park.
Experts agree that Mount Rainier will become a very active volcano at some time in the future. They say the real problem is that they do not know when. Experts also agree that the great heat produced by an explosion of the volcano would melt the rivers of ice that are part of the mountain. This could happen in only a few minutes. They say the melting ice would produce flowing rivers of mud and rock. People who live in the southern part of Seattle and in the city of Tacoma, Washington, would be in danger. Experts carefully study conditions at Mount Rainier. They hope to be able to warn of any dangerous change. But for now, the Great Mountain provides a safe and beautiful place to visit in the northwest area of the United States.
A very different kind of national park is in the eastern state of Pennsylvania. It is called Valley Forge National Historical Park. It is near the city of Philadelphia. Valley Forge also is a beautiful place. Within the park are many different kinds of trees and flowers, huge areas of green grass, and a beautiful, slow-moving river. You can see many deer. Often you can come very near deer. The animals do not run away because they very often see people in the park. It is not the natural beauty that made Valley Forge a National Historic Park. It is what happened there. Many other places were important in the American War for Independence, but no other place is so filled with suffering. No battle was fought at Valley Forge. Yet, more than 2,000 soldiers of the small American army died there. They died of hunger, disease, and the fierce cold in the winters of 1777 and 1778. It was also at Valley Forge that the men of this small army learned to be real soldiers.
What happened at Valley Forge began in August of 1777. A British force threatened to capture the American capital at Philadelphia. The American commander, General George Washington, moved the army to defend the city. A battle was fought at a place called Brandywine and another at Germantown. The British forces won those battles and occupied Philadelphia. By the month of December, General Washington needed to find a place his small army could easily defend. He chose Valley Forge. More than 15 centimeters of snow fell only a few days after the army arrived. Ice covered the rivers. The soldiers began building very small wooden houses called log cabins. They built more than 1,000 of these small houses.
The fierce winter was only one of the many problems the American Army faced. Many of the soldiers had no shoes. Most had no winter clothing. All suffered from a severe lack of food. Then several diseases struck. Typhus, typhoid, dysentery, and pneumonia were among the diseases that spread through the army. Most of the soldiers became sick. Many died. General Washington wrote letters to Congress asking for help. He asked for money to buy food and clothing. But Congress had no money to give him. Several things happened to change the small army during that long and terrible winter. General Washington knew the army had been defeated in the past because of a lack of real training. A man named Baron Friedrich von Steuben had recently come from Europe. He was an expert at training soldiers. So each day during the terrible winter, Baron von Steuben taught the men of the American Army to be soldiers. He also taught them something very important. He taught them to believe in themselves.
As the winter passed, the army slowly changed. New troops arrived. New equipment arrived. An alliance with France brought guarantees of military support. The men who survived that terrible winter were no longer a group of armed citizens. They were well-trained soldiers who no longer feared the enemy. When the American Army left Valley Forge on June 19, 1778, the soldiers took with them the spirit that had helped them to survive. The war for independence would continue for another 5 years. Terrible battles were yet to be fought. However, the men who had survived the winter in Valley Forge knew they could win. They did.
Today, you can visit the area where Baron von Steuben trained the soldiers of the American Revolution. You can watch a movie about the American soldiers' struggle to survive that long-ago winter. You can see examples of the small log cabins the soldiers built. You can walk on paths along the remains of the defense system and the officers' headquarters. And you can feel the spirit of Valley Forge.
This program was written by Paul Thompson. It was produced by Kelly Jean Kelly. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Shirley Griffith. Join us again next week for Explorations in VOA Special English.